Thank you for calling Hampton Inn. Tasha speaking. I can help you.
Yeah, can I get room 412?
Sure.
Hello.
Hello, Yvonne.
I'm surprised this even works.
Okay. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, April 10th,
1991.
Close, 2014. It is just before 2:30 UTC, and you know, you may sense a little bit of frustration in my co-host Yvonne's voice. Oh, and I'm Sam Minter, by the way. So, Yvonne, tell me why you're frustrated.
Well, I'm in a town that sucks.
Yeah.
I have, for whatever ungodly reason, okay, that I can't figure out, the cell signal here for AT&T has been intermittent. I mean, and what I'm talking about, no, it's not that the signal is bad. It's that for whatever reason, for at least now, it's been 2 hours. I've been in this town 6 hours. For two of those hours, the signal has completely gone. No signal. Okay? And then it magically when I first got here, that happened for an hour and a half, then all of a sudden magically reappeared. Full bars. And now again, it's gone.
And also, your hotel Wi-Fi is crap.
Is crap. Yes. It is utter crap.
So we're trying to do this call on Skype like we normally do. I talk to him for a couple minutes. It drops out. We talk to him for a couple minutes. It drops out. I try to call his cell. I get nothing but voicemail. And so I had this brainstorm, and I'm like, Yvonne, you're in a hotel room. They probably have a landline phone.
And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I'm like, I haven't touched one of these. I mean, I don't know. I wonder who the hell the last person to ever use one of these things in this room has been.
So yes, I called the hotel.
Well, at least the phone will probably be free of bacteria and clean, because I'm sure nobody's used it.
So I have to actually call the hotel operator and tell them your room number and all that. And hey, we're talking. But
yeah.
But you've got a leash.
Yeah, I do. I have to hold this handset because this phone doesn't even have a speakerphone. Okay, so yeah.
Alex says you only have a leash if you have a dog or a cat.
Ah, okay, all right. Well, usually it's at least a dog. I haven't seen too many cats on leashes.
I've seen that occasionally, but it's very rare and very odd.
Yes, it's very rare.
Well, unless it's like a tiger or something like that. Sometimes you see them with leashes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, so we do have a plan today. We have four exciting topics. We got David Letterman. We got the CEO of Mozilla. We've got the Cuban Twitter. And we have Heartbleed. So, going... as we have the last couple of shows, I'm going to roll
dice. You're going to roll the dice?
I'm going to roll the dice, so I'm going to hold it.
He's really enamored of this dice roll thing.
I like the dice thing. Of course, let me make sure my sound is on so you... Because, of course, it's not like actual dice. It's like an app. So here we go. That wasn't very loud. I got a one.
I can hear it.
So let's talk about Letterman and the late night talk shows, because I actually talked about the late night talk shows a few weeks ago when Jimmy Kimmel took over the Tonight Show on a week that you weren't here. But this week, David Letterman announced his retirement.
Quiet, stop.
Boo, boo, boo! This is Sam from the future and Alex. Just to say that obviously I said Jimmy Kimmel. It was Jimmy Fallon that took over the Tonight Show. Anyway. Back to the show. Beep, beep, beep!
Yep, it's going to be sometime in 2015. So, but, you know, here's the thing, right? When I was, I guess, geez, it's been such a long time. God, has it been 30 years? Okay, yeah. Shit. 30 years ago, right? Well, here you want to know the crazy shit about this? Let's put it this way. When I started watching Letterman, right?
Yeah.
It was, I'm going to guess. You want to be food this time? 83, 84. Okay, around that time.
I remember when Letterman started, because I remember watching
the
things that were on
before. I actually think it may be when Letterman started, but I don't want to say that it may have been back to 82.
Okay, yeah,
I'm
anyway.
Not sure. He started on my birthday in 82, okay, February 2nd. So I know it was very early, but think about this, right, okay? If you think about how long Letterman's been on TV, okay?
Yeah, and you're talking
years prior
when he,
to that.
You're talking
would have
when
been
he started
1952.
On NBC. Yeah.
I mean, 52, not even Johnny Carson was on. Not even. I mean, there was nothing on it at that hour. Okay?
Yes.
All right?
And Letterman, counting both his shows, NBC and CBS, has been doing this. He's got the record for the longest person doing this kind of show.
Jesus. Yeah, I mean, it's been 30. You know, it's 32 years. It'll be 33 years when he's done. Okay? It's crazy. I mean, you know, and let's face it, when he started doing the show, the show started at 12:30 a.m. Eastern. Where I lived, it really started a good chunk of the year at 1:30 a.m. Eastern. It shows you how much sleep I got before I went to school. I usually watched it when it came on live.
Because you were on, what is it, Atlantic?
Atlantic,
time?
Yes.
Yeah, in
okay.
Puerto Rico.
Yeah, so, yeah. So I watched it, you know, at that time. And, in Puerto Rico, I was probably one of the, I mean, there not, very few other people were able to watch it. I mean, we had an actual real satellite dish, you know, that actually picked off the signal straight from NBC in New York. Okay, that's
and
how I
watched
it.
When he's talking real satellite dish, just everybody, he's not talking one of these pansy little DirecTV dishes.
No,
he's talking one of these 6-foot dishes out in the backyard.
It was 20 some odd feet in diameter.
So a huge ash dish. Did you have to actually move it to point at different satellites?
Well, actually, we had more than one. We had one that you could move to point to different satellites. We had one that was the flatter one, the spherical one. That what you did is that you actually put different feed receivers in front of it on a stick, and therefore you could pick up multiple satellites at the same time. Which that was like the more preferred method for TV stations. So
yes,
that way they
yes.
you know they could pick up all the different feeds. So we had. The main one where I watched that was that. Yeah.
And what Yvonne is, of course, not mentioned, he was, of course, in Puerto Rico. He's, of course, the dish in his backyard was, of course, the Arecibo dish.
Well, some people saw it.
In between watching movies on HBO, he was looking for aliens.
Yes, of course. Well, I'll tell you what, some people thought that it did have something to do with that, and we had to dispel those rumors and said, no, we're not doing research. We're just trying to watch television.
We watched
it at that time, but you think about it, I mean, geez, I mean, that was like, I mean, my God, I mean, 33 years ago, I mean, my point is that, if you think about it, I mean, you think about what we watched in the 80s, and like, you have to go, I mean, the technology back in the 50s, for God's sakes, I mean, how things have evolved, I mean, to the extent where we're at, I mean, this is nuts. So Letterman staying on that long. Now I will admit, I mean, I've rarely watched Letterman the last few years.
Yeah, when I talked about this a few weeks ago, one of the things I said is I don't watch any of these shows anymore. I watched them a little. I watched them a lot when I was a teenager. I watched them a little bit in college. I watched them even less in my 20s and early 30s. And I'd say in the last 10 years, it's incredibly rare that I'd watch any of these or Saturday Night Live or any of these. And, you know, but I see some of it. And how do I see it? If there's anything good, it's on YouTube, it's online, and people say, look at what they did last night. And it's either.
That's right.
And so, like, you know, since What's his name? Jimmy Fallon took over the Tonight Show. You know, I've tweeted a number of his little skits because people have shared them around and they've been cool. And I'm like, okay, I watched that. And the same thing is true. Like, the once in a long while, Saturday Night Live does something funny. And when they do, people tweet it around. I don't have to watch these shows anymore.
That's right.
Because if there's something good, it'll be, you know, you'll find out about it and you'll watch that bit. And you don't have to watch an hour every night.
What I will say is that, you know, back then, especially when I didn't, you know, sleep until quite a lot late. I mean,
yeah.
Not that I even like now. I'm a guy to go to bed. I mean, compared to most people. But let's face it. I mean, back then. I mean, shit.
You're a typical teenager. Teenagers stay up late and wake up as late as they can get away with.
I don't. Well, true. Okay. So anyway. When this shit came on at 12:30, 1:30 in the morning, I was, you know, watching this shit. I wouldn't miss it. You know? Letterman put it on earlier, and I still don't watch him.
Now you hear he's retiring, and it just makes you feel old.
Yeah, very.
Yeah, but every once in a while, you know, we have reminisced about Carson, and, you know, it's a whole different world, and, you know, Letterman had his days. From the little bits I've seen of him more recently, like, you know, his heyday, his best days were when he was on NBC.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah. I mean, it's not a long time ago now. Yeah, it's not that he has a bad show. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he has a good show, and he's good. But I mean, let's face it. I mean, it's such a different show. I mean, let's face it. Letterman's old.
Well, and you know, I just realized the last time I actually remember watching a whole Letterman show from end to end. Do you know when it was?
Gosh, I don't know when.
The day he came back after 9/11.
Oh, there you go.
You know, he was the first of the live shows to come back. Leno basically let him go first because he was in New York. He had a show. It was, you know, not the typical show, obviously. It was very emotional, blah, blah, blah. This is where, who was it? It was Dan Rather broke down crying. You know, I think it was Dan Rather. I remember tuning in just for that. But I haven't watched since then.
I've watched a few episodes here and there, but just not very often. I mean, I will admit. So it's
a dying era because, I mean, obviously they'll probably replace Letterman with somebody.
Some people
they're talking
are watching
about Colbert.
It, obviously. I mean they're very profitable shows. Well, a lot of people still watch them.
They are, but the numbers have declined dramatically from those days.
Well,
because there's
in
so
general,
much more to
all,
choose from. Yeah, exactly.
All,
exactly.
Well, in general, all network TV numbers
exactly.
have declined.
And,
I mean, let's face it.
And
I mean,
people
there's so many different options. You know, back then, when you tuned at that time, right? I mean, let's face it. What the heck were your options?
You had Carson. You had Ted Koppel on Nightline. And before Letterman moved to CBS, you had Jack Shit on CBS.
Yep.
And that's it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you could catch some Benny Hill on PBS.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
You know, but you know, look, even the new Tonight Show and everything, they are changing to adapt to what I was saying. You know, where do people see these? They see these when people get clips and share them around. So they're getting very social media focused. They're getting very much, you know, let's do the 2 to 3 minute skit that people will be sharing tomorrow. I don't, there are people who watch the whole thing, but it's declining and you get a lot more from, you know, these sort of being factories for viral videos. But I was just listening.
This phone hurts my ear. Can I say this? This phone hurts my ear. This is a really irritating phone.
Yes,
anyway.
Yes. All right. So I was actually just listening to a podcast on the way home today, from Andy Anacco. And he was talking about this and saying that, you know, one of the problems, though, if you start restructuring your show to basically be a factory for viral videos, well, then you're not just competing against the other two late night talk show hosts. You're competing against every Yahoo with a camera who generates something funny.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you know, let's face it. I mean, there's something to be said for talent. and team and production and putting shit together, you know, with equipment. Look, I remember when I was in high school, we happened to have, when I used to do a lot of different videos and stuff for entertainment. Well, let me tell you something. When I did them just with my own junk at home, it wasn't the same as I had a friend of mine who we had access to a television station and the production team. And let me tell you something. When they helped us put shit together, that was quite a lot better.
No, and there's no question about that. However, I will say, over the last 20, 30 years, the gap has lessened.
Oh, no, totally. Agreed.
What you can do on your own with a laptop and a $500 camera is...
I agree, but there's always the gap between, like, what you talk about, professional production versus, listen, you may have all the tools, but let's face it, if that's not your life, I mean, it's just, look, it's difficult to be just as good. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just...
Oh, no. Absolutely. I know what you're saying, but the gap is a lot less.
It is a lot less.
There are a lot of things that amateurs put together that,
that are very good, people see.
And agreed. Also, there's also this middle ground, too, of people who aren't amateurs, but who are producing stuff direct for the web. You see a number of networks, I'm thinking of Geek and Sundry, which is Felicia Day's network. There's the Nerdist network. There are a whole bunch of what's the guy? Leo Laporte's network for the Twit network.
Yeah, but listen, don't worry about it. Time Warner Cable's going to buy up all the bandwidth, and nobody's going to be able to send anything unless it's approved by Time Warner.
Yeah. But anyway, my point is, like, there's all this middle ground too. There's a lot more to compete for people's attention than there was, and there's still room for these type of shows. The Tonight Show is not going to disappear in the next 5 years, most likely. But, you know, it's changing. It's changing dramatically. It ain't what it was 10, 20, 30 years ago by any means. And it's going to be even less 10 years from now.
Yes. Well, this is all evolving. We're talking about, a whole bunch of people are talking about this whole Comcast Time Warner, you know, merger, and they've been going, they went in front of Congress and they were testifying, you know, trying to get it approved, okay? And, you know, a number of people are saying, it's like, who gives a shit about broadcast? With the internet, I mean, in the future, I mean, who knows? I mean, how things are happening. I mean, I think that, obviously, distribution and how everything happens is going to be different. I mean, people's habits of how they consume video is changing. There are certain things that, for example, I'm like, right now, I just switched channels, like I was flipping through the TV, just to have something. I mean, there's a live baseball game right now. There's a live basketball game. Well, that's different. It's a live event. All right. Okay. There is a value to you knowing what's happening, like, right now. Well, but there's a lot of other stuff, like you were mentioning, all these programs and stuff and whatever, that right now doesn't really matter.
No, I talked a couple weeks about cord cutting and such, and it's been a recurring theme for me over the last couple years. But I'm so close at this time. I'm systematically at this point moving all of my things that I had wish lists for on my TiVo. I put together a little list for myself somewhere where I keep track of what the last episode I watched was so I can remember. And I'm getting it all from online services, whether it be Netflix or Amazon or Apple or wherever, depending on which the content, which by the way is very freaking annoying that different things have to come from different places because of exclusivity deals and stuff. But, you know, there's very little, very, very little that I require the old-fashioned cable subscription for. And most of it is the timely stuff. It's the daily news broadcasts. If I cared about sports, it would be sports. But, you know, it's only a matter of time till that stuff falls too. And you can just, you know, hey, if you want your baseball, you just pay Major League Baseball directly and you stream it.
I don't know about that, because the problem is that I don't think people want to pay like piecemeal for stuff. So, you know, I think you're all, I think, you know, one of the things that you keep seeing.
But here's the thing. I think.
Wait, hold on. Okay. I was going to say something. You've got all these guys that are doing content aggregation and charging for it.
Yeah.
Which I think that here's the difference between this model and the model that we're having with a lot of the news and newspapers on a TV. I think people like the fact, hey, can I just pay one fee and look at all these different services? Not go to the paywall for The Economist, the paywall for The New York Times, the paywall for this shit.
That drives people crazy.
I agree with that,
but people are looking to be smarter about being able to be more selective and not have to get the channel package with 100 channels when they only want 5.
Totally agree. But the one thing is, but they want an aggregator and they want packages. I really think that most people, that is, I think, one of the reasons why so many of the online digital sources have trouble charging for anything. Because, I mean, shit, I don't want to go to the paywall of this paper and the other paper and keep paying for every one of these fucking things.
Well,
I want to be able to go and look at shit.
I mentioned a while back, I happily, you know, pay my $5 a month or whatever to Feedly to get their pro level of service. And I would be willing to pay more to an aggregator that gives me everything I want. But
right.
I am incredibly reluctant. Like, there's only one or two. I mean, I've given money to Andrew Sullivan directly for his website. Uh-huh. And I hardly ever hit his paywall. So it's more like the same reason I would, like, give to NPR or something. It's because I support the cause, not because, like,
I actually
need it to see his stuff. I would pay an aggregator. What I want to know is that I can bring in everything I want. I can read everything I want, and yeah.
And you can watch it through multiple medium. Can I get it through, for example, I keep saying like entertainment, for example. I want to be able to get it through audio. I want to get it mobile. I want to be able to get it live video. I want to be able to get it however the hell I want to consume it.
That's an absolute requirement. Anything I get, whether it's audio, video, or text-based stuff, I want to be able to consume it. Whatever device I happen to have with me, mobily, on my desktop, and on my big screen projector in my living room, too.
Yeah. So I think that's just a very frustrating thing with it.
And I think
with this whole thing, and why, you know, going back to this whole thing where we went to Letterman, why did this whole, I mean, this is the end of an era. I mean, Letterman retiring. I mean, I don't know, any of these people that they may put to replace him or any of these guys, I don't know how long that's going to last. I mean, I just don't see it.
Yeah, I think we're in one of these awkward transitional periods. I mean, although you can argue that every period's a transitional period between something, but I think a lot of things will probably settle out in the next 5 to 10 years. But it's going to settle out with, I cross my fingers and hope for a much more dynamic, flexible environment where you can choose. And like you said, there are going to be people who want to have the channel package. There are other people who are going to want to buy a la carte for the two or three things they actually consume. And the model should encourage all of the above. But you also have these annoying lock-ins where, you know, you have exclusives in one place or another where, you know, Netflix has this thing, but HBO has this thing, but this thing is over here, and you can't get everything through one service. You have to get a decent selection, you have to actually subscribe to two or three of them, and that is really freaking annoying.
Well, yeah, but I think, I mean, even like with television, you have some of that. Sometimes, I mean, you know, for example, like DirecTV has an exclusive deal for NFL rights.
Yeah.
For example, I think that still will happen, But I think that if you're, listen, but if you're able to get 90%+ of what you want, yeah, right, through paying through one package to get that, I think that people will do that, okay? They will want to do that. I think they will. It's going to be a different consumption model, but you look at it even like, for example, like Netflix, for example, right now. People, I mean, let's face it, the numbers of people signing up for Netflix have been, like, increasing substantially. People like that model. Now, they don't have a lot of different content, okay? I mean, they have a lot, but a lot of...
They don't have a lot of new stuff.
Exactly. They don't have a lot of new stuff, okay? They have some, but not all of it. But it shows that model can work.
Well,
okay,
I tweeted an article about this in the last week sometime. Part of that is because of these exclusivity deals, where basically like a new theatrical run movie, the way studios have written the contracts, have sort of a cascading where first they're in the live theaters, then they're in the sort of second tier theaters and HBO.
But I'll tell you what, the other day, I mean, I've been seeing more and more movies being released electronic distribution and at the theaters at the same time.
No, it's
something that didn't happen before, but happens now.
They are experimenting with those kinds of things, but lots of the first run, the reason is there's a schedule worked out before the movie is released to anywhere that says, you know, in the first few months it's going to be here, and then it's going to be there, right, and then it's going to be there, and then it's going to be there, and for the first 3 years,
maximize the revenue. That's what you're trying to do.
And then eventually it gets to be everywhere. But so, like, if you're looking for a movie that's more than 8 years old, yeah, you'll probably find it on Netflix.
Right.
But, you know, if you're looking for the newest thing that was out last summer, yeah, probably not. Unless it happens to be one of the ones that Netflix made a deal about.
Right.
Anyway, I think we beat that one out. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back on the next topic. Back after this.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620, and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, we're back. So, Yvonne, can you hear that clicking?
Yes, what is that?
So, Alex took the DICE program.
Oh, boy.
So this entire time during last segment, and so I apologize if anybody's being bothered by the noise, but Alex is sitting on top of my bookshelf in my office, and if we were doing...
Just rolling the dice.
And he's just rolling dice over and over and over again, and you can actually, with this program, put like hundreds of dice on the sort of virtual table at one time
I'll take them to Vegas one of these days.
Yeah. So if anyone was actually looking live at my webcam right now, they'd actually see him on top of the bookshelf and me at my desk, and, you know.
Great!
Yeah, fun stuff. Anyway, so this means I can't roll the dice for the next one.
But I can't
use a website.
Well, can you tell them to roll the dice once for us?
It's okay. I rolled. The next up is the Cuban Twitter.
Okay. So
you're Cuban, right?
I'm still a little bit baffled why everybody
I'm
is
teasing,
like...
teasing, of course. I know you're not Cuban. Go ahead.
I am not Cuban, you moron, but, okay... I'm still a little bit baffled why everybody... Okay, explain to me why people are baffled. I mean, the United States... And I'll tell you why I'm saying it. Look, the U.S., for all this time, has had used very different mediums to try to distribute or, like, push their agenda and information to Cuba. They used to have this big radio station sending stuff over there, radio...
Radio Marti.
Radio Marti, all this shit and stuff and whatever. So I just saw this, maybe when because I didn't delve into the details, as another extension of that type of campaign. And Radio Marti, I'm talking, you remember in Europe, in Eastern Europe, what the heck was it? Radio, what the hell was it called during the Cold War? Radio America? Radio Free America?
Yeah. There were a number of different services.
Yeah.
So look.
So why did they go up over this?
Okay, I'll tell you a couple things.
I didn't delve into it in detail. That's why I'm asking. So I
can tell you a couple of the reasons why I think there's a difference here. And first of all, yes, absolutely, the United States has a history of these kinds of things, overt, covert, everything else. It's not a big surprise, but it's another sort of head bump. But look, the difference between sort of the Radio Marti, Radio Free America, everything like that, everybody knew it was the Americans, right?
Even when the Americans
didn't officially acknowledge it, because I think it was like years and years before it was officially acknowledged that Radio Marti was actually the Americans. Beep, beep, beep. Actually, I looked that up, and as far as I can tell, Radio Marti was an acknowledged American initiative from the very beginning. So it must have been something else I was thinking of where we denied it for a long time. Or maybe I'm just confused, which often happens. Anyway, back to the show. Beep, beep, beep. But Everybody freaking knew it was the Americans.
Right.
There was no question that this was sort of an independent blah, 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 blah. This is one of the differences here is they went through a variety of efforts of setting up shell companies and blah, 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 and putting fake ads on it and blah, blah, you know, to make it seem like this was some sort of independent effort to make a Cuban version of Twitter.
Okay.
And now, according to, like, who you're talking, yeah, the original story that came out on this in the AP was like the plan was to get it to a certain critical mass and then start injecting content into it to try to agitate for demonstrations and pro-democracy things and stuff like that. But it never actually got to that point because it was actually getting very, very popular to the point where it couldn't stay below the radar anymore. And it cost too much to run it. And so they decided to pull the plug.
Okay.
Meanwhile, after the article came out, USAID, who was running the program, was like, you know, no. It was, we were never going to do that kind of propaganda on it. It was all just about providing a free method of communications for Cubans because they didn't have a lot of options. And we just believe in the free flow of information and that on its own, without any agitation, it has, you know, it encourages democracy, right? Mm-hmm. Because, hey, look what Twitter did throughout the Middle East in the Arab Spring and all of that. Not that that turned out all that great in the long run anyway, but look at the big effect it's had. Another big criticism here is that if you're going to have somebody do it, having USAID do it puts that organization at risk because it's known or theoretically is supposed to be sort of a neutral aid and development thing across the world,
right,
as opposed to an outlet for American propaganda.
Right.
Now, the reality is, if you look at the history of USAID, it is, of course, done. Its agenda is all about promoting America through various ways,
yes,
even though you're giving aid or whatever. So it does fit with the history. But you look at this and you sort of slap your head and say, yeah, haven't we learned our lesson about how these things can backfire, especially if you have the secrecy around it and all of this kind of stuff? Because, you know, because then all of a sudden, once it's exposed, everybody's like, oh shit, it was an American CIA spy thing,
right,
and they were spying on all the Cubans.
Let's face it, if they had been public about it all along, I mean,
let's be honest, it wouldn't have worked because it would have been shut down immediately by the Cuban authorities if they just said right off the bat, hey, this is we're providing a free Twitter equivalent sponsored by the U.S. government for the use of all you Cubans.
Well, but apparently it got very popular.
Yeah, it did get very popular, apparently, with its true origins hidden, of course. And people liked it and blah, blah, blah. But again, to me, the thing about this is, it's when you have a program, and this applies, this ties into all of the talk we've been having about the NSA and everything else for the last year. When you have a program that will only work if it's secret and nobody knows the truth about it, you fundamentally got a very, very fragile thing. That you're walking on.
Here's the way I look at this. I can't remember when the heck was it. About a year ago or so. I'm in Puerto Rico. I'm flipping through channels, and I get to this TV station. My grandmother didn't have cable, so I'm looking at the live air channels. I flip through a station that I'm listening to the news for a while. It looks like a news channel. It looks like some kind of Spanish version of CNN. And I'm listening to the stuff, and it's like, this is really weird. It sounds like slanted in a strange way. It sounds like freaking propaganda for like, you know, some agenda. And then I started researching online and find out about it, that this is a TV station. And I'm like, I'm still shocked that they have an operating certificate that was basically funded in Puerto Rico, inside U.S. territory, authorized by the FCC, basically funded by the Venezuelan government.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what the fuck?
And with all this Ukraine kind of stuff, it's also been in the news that RT, which is basically funded by Russia and the Kremlin, is they've got RT America, which is on the cable channels in a number of major U.S. cities. And their website and everything else, and it's basically a propaganda outlet for Russia.
Yeah.
I mean, it's there too, but you know, but these things are, but it's known, you know, and the one you found out, you could looked it up and you found out where.
But it took a lot of looking for me to really find out that was the case.
That's true, and you know, in this case, I'm sure, you know,
And it's just because I'm pretty discerning about the news, and when people are talking and have a certain slant, that I'm like thinking all of a sudden, I'm like, there's something wrong with this coverage.
Yeah.
See, now,
I'm going to go back with the Cuba thing to, you know, something I've said in a couple other contexts this year. It's like, first of all, the secrecy thing poisons everything. Even if it's a good idea otherwise, once you make it secret, it causes all kinds of potential problems with it. And then also, you're engaging in deception, and I understand that deception has been considered a standard form of statecraft for all of history. However, it seems like if you're trying to get people to emulate the ideals of America, you don't do that by starting out with a lie.
Well, I get that. I think that. I will say this.
Although, having said that, ideals of America, my ass, like, you look at our political process, you look at our campaigns, on lies.
Well, look, but what I will say is this. I mean, I think that it's like everything. It's like how you handle it. I mean, I think that giving people a platform to be able to talk is a good thing.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
But that plan to, like, you know, basically, oh, let's incite protests, let's do all this stuff. You know, a lot of the things about it really frustrates me, that, because let's face it, most of the problems with these regimes is the fact that people just can't go and just, you know, speak out about what's going on.
Well, and also, this meddling doesn't help. Like, because let's say you have the environment anyway. There are all kinds of bad things that people, if they were communicating about it, they, you know, over time they're going to get fed up with them and they'll want change anyway. But if you inject, you know, oh, it wasn't an honest demonstration. It was actually a demonstration that was organized and incited secretly by the CIA. Well, that poisons fucking everything.
Right.
We've got accusations that that's what's been going on in Ukraine, in Venezuela, in all of these places. Talk about that kind of stuff was going on in Egypt, all over the place. And because nobody trusts us, because we've got the history of this.
Let me look. A lot of people trust us. Okay, all right. The other day, I was pulling up some information. I tried to see some recent polling data from around the world of American of perspectives of foreign people in foreign countries about and what their perceptions are of the United States. Okay, in general. All right, and I mean, very, very positive in most places. Okay, I mean, more positive than I thought, to be honest with you.
Let me put it another way, but let me get to the
punchline. Okay. But then you look at a couple of countries but the outliers in this stuff were number one, the Middle East, obviously. Okay. All right. But the other outliers were Venezuela.
Yep.
And Argentina. All right. Two countries that have had presidents over the last 8 years that have seized control of the media substantially, okay, all right, and basically just blare anti-American propaganda at every freaking opportunity they've got, okay? Right. It's just the blare of nonstop anti-American propaganda day in, day out. Everything that's wrong in our country is the USA's fault. They're the ones that are fucking us. They're the ones that are screwing with us. And you see the numbers, like you'll see a country like El Salvador, Costa Rica, so forth, favorable rating units, 60-70% negative ratings, all less than 10%. Then you go to Venezuela, 40% negative. You're like, how the hell? You know? And it's the effect of that propaganda. It is effective.
I don't deny that. But what I will say is, like, whenever the U.S. government does stuff like this, it proves those people right to an extent, and it makes their arguments more plausible.
No, it doesn't prove those people right. It just gives them more ammunition to say how fucking evil we are.
My second paragraph was better, or phrase. It's not that it proves us right. It's that it makes it more credible when they say things like that. You know, when they're saying, well, you know, the Americans are just instigating. We can't say, oh, no, we never do that. Because we've been proven time and time and time again
that we do that. Yeah, I know. We do. But anyway, all right. Well,
okay. Let's take another break and we'll be right back.
Ready for the test, Dracula? I'm ready. Frankenstein, then. Let us begin.
Creepy Classics celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, here we are. Okay, so we did Cuban Twitter. Before that, we did Letterman, and of course, we veered off into all kinds of other topics. So now, choosing randomly. Now, I'm using random.org since he's got my iPad now. Let's do Heartbleed.
Heartbleed.
Have you been following this, Yvonne?
I have.
So, for those of you who've been had your heads in the sand, a vulnerability was discovered in OpenSSL, which is a software toolkit, open source, that is used as the underlying security mechanism for huge portions of the internet. In terms of servers, it's in clients, client software as well. And basically, it was a bug that was introduced just over 2 years ago, or about 2 years ago. That enabled someone who knew what they were doing to basically use an overflow type error to request the server to return back some information And they get to ask how much they want, but there was no checking to make sure they were asking for a reasonable amount back that corresponded to what they were supposed to get back. And so they can ask for a huge number back and basically take out chunks of memory off of the server that they're making the request for. Hey, turn that down, Alex. And so because of this, and they're just grabbing bits of computer memory, they can get anything that's in the computer's memory, which includes the security keys used to secure that server. Okay, I'm turning that down, Yvonne. You're not Yvonne. Volume down. You can play it, but keep the volume low. Okay. Basically anything. You can get the keys that were used to secure the supposedly secure transactions on that server, but you can also get anything else on there. If you've got email stored on the server, you can get the email. If you've got credit card numbers on the server, you can get the credit card numbers. You can get basically anything that's there. If you do get the security keys, then once you've got them, you can translate any traffic going backwards and forwards to that server altogether. Right. And so basically, the security experts have been describing this as pretty much the worst bug that could possibly have been discovered here, because it basically means all the sites that were using this were not really secure after all.
Right.
And again, it's affected huge swaths of the internet. Not every site you think about, like some of them were vulnerable to this, some of them weren't. Major portions.
Yeah, because there's a number of sites that didn't use OpenSSL. They used other.
But you got Yahoo, you got Google, you've got major players that were.
No, you got major players. No doubt about it. I mean,
the advice everybody is saying is, of course, now change all your passwords, all of them. Basically, and if you reuse passwords, even more so. Alex, you gotta be quiet. I'm gonna have mommy come get you. No, okay, I got this. Okay, and of course, there's also the talk of, like, this is exactly the kind of stuff that in the Snowden documents we're talking about, where we were talking about, you know, it. Encryption is good. Mathematically, it's really hard to break. However, if the software has bugs, you can get in anyway.
Right.
And that's exactly what's happening here. And some of those slides that the NSA had were boasting about how basically they could get into lots and lots of encrypted traffic. And people speculated it was because of bugs like this, and this is the biggest one found so far. And so everybody's saying, you know, it most likely, you know, your petty small-time criminals may not have discovered this until it was announced a couple days ago, but your major intelligence agencies of the world, and we're not talking just the NSA, we're talking about the Russians, the Chinese, the British, everybody, you know, who has a major intelligence presence, probably knew about this thing already because they've got huge staffs dedicated to finding bugs and stuff like this, whereas apparently the group that actually maintained this piece of software is like five guys working in their spare time for no money.
Right.
So, I'm taking out Alex. Do you want to say anything to Yvonne?
But my question that I have is, like, why the hell would everybody become dependent on OpenSSL when there were other options that were not being maintained by frickin' four guys that were doing this part-time?
Well, remember, the biggest alternative to this was from RSA, and RSA had a similar bug that actually was introduced by the NSA that mm-hmm. also introduced a vulnerability. Right. I'm taking Alex. I'll be right back. Doo-doo-doo. Here's a quick interlude from Future Sam to cover the several minutes where I was away dealing with Alex. Anyway, this is shorter than those several minutes, but I'm talking and rambling aimlessly, so I'll stop now. Here, back to the show. Doo-doo-doo. Okay, sorry about that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, you're saying alternatives. Well, one, this was very popular because A, it was free. B, people did trust it because it was open source, and at least in theory, experts could review it and go through it and find bugs at any time. But the problem was, people didn't. Because right. It was a complicated mess of a software. There are only a few people who dedicated the time and effort to really work on it and understand it. And apparently it had built up over years and really was messy. And what happened now, the reason it was found, was precisely because of all the Snowden revelations, a couple organizations decided to do a deep dive and look for vulnerabilities in it. But like I said, you know, going with one from a big commercial company didn't protect people either.
Right.
Because the libraries coming out of RSA and Microsoft both had as their default settings things that have since proved to be very insecure, that had known vulnerabilities that the NSA was taking advantage of too. And, you know, we say NSA here, but it's a shortcut because, frankly, if the NSA knew about it, everybody else knew about it too.
Probably.
You know, in terms of intelligence agencies and things like that, and probably some independent bad guys too.
Right.
And so I retweeted right before we came on line. What was it? It was somebody basically saying, let me get the exact quote. Bringing up my Twitter. I retweeted Zunguzungu is his Twitter handle. Breaking. No part of the internet is secure and you can't fix it. Learn to live with existential failure and uncertainty.
Nah.
You know, because, look, basically this is what we've seen over the last, the last year or so. Is there... okay, talk real quick, Alex. That's not talking. Okay, bye. Okay, I guess he got that off his chest. But that's what we've seen over the last year or so, is basically that you gotta operate under the assumption at this point that almost nothing you do online is secure in any way, shape, or form. Because even aside from this kind of surveillance and spying and holes in RSA, we've had the Target breach of credit card numbers. We've had a number of major sites that lost password information. We've had all kinds of little hacks here and there where companies were losing significant amounts of personal information. Whatever trust there was in these systems a year ago is very significantly eroded at this time.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, I mean,
And the one thing you can say about this is, I guess, everybody's sort of woken up to this fact at this point. So all kinds of companies are scrambling to figure out more secure solutions to everything. I mean, this was uncovered because Google and one other security organization spent the time to try to figure it out and to try to look for problems like this. There are probably 1,000 startups in stealth mode looking to have better solutions for various aspects, secure email, secure texting, secure this, secure that. It's going to, you know, and it takes a while for these things to spin up, but it's, people are working on it at major companies and at little companies and at startups. You know, everybody's thinking about this now as, okay, this is a problem. There's got to be, you know, we're going to put in efforts to try to mitigate it. And who knows who will be successful and who won't be. But clearly at this point, it's like, you know, the amount of information that was potentially vulnerable due to this bug for the last 2 years is immense. And
yes.
If we're lucky, you know, it was only the NSA and a few security and intelligence agencies who'd figured this out. I mean, I guess if we're lucky, nobody had figured it out beforehand, but I don't think anybody really believes that. If we're lucky, it was the security agencies because, frankly, they don't give a shit about most people. You know, they have, regardless
right.
of everything.
I mean, they're not out to steal our credit card information, our bank account statements. And
right.
Shit,
I mean,
you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I believe all of this surveillance stuff is way overboard, but the people who defend it are very much correct when they say, look, everybody, right now at least, nobody's looking at your stuff. We don't give a shit about you. We're targeting, unless you are associated with terrorist groups, et cetera, you're not our target. Now, right. They've got a very broad definition of associated, blah, 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 and there's all kinds of potential for abuse just because of the existence of the technology.
But it's not like, let's say, the Target breach where they fucking pilfered my credit card and my wife's.
Yeah, my wife's too. They didn't get mine because I hadn't gone to Target, but...
But they got all three of us. I mean, three out of four people.
They got my daughter, my wife.
I mean,
yeah.
Jesus. You know, I mean, that's my point. I mean, the NSA is not trying to get our fucking credit card information to be spending money.
Yeah, exactly. The NSA may have all kinds of other bad things about it, but they're not trying to do that. They're not trying to infiltrate your password to go, do other miscellaneous, nefarious stuff on the net. Well, maybe in some cases, but not generally. So we hope that it's only the intelligence agencies who were aware of this bug, because if it was the Russian scammers who were looking for credit card information and spam accounts and things like that, then lots of people are fucked.
Right.
You know, so far there's no indication of that, but you know, again, all the recommendations are basically change all your freaking passwords everywhere. You know, even if your particular organization wasn't directly affected, if you've shared information in any way between them and other sites, whether it be using the same password in two places, which you're not supposed to do, but almost everybody does. I do. Or even if it's just some of your I forgot my password information is the same. You should be changing everything, because you know, if somebody gets access to your information at one site, they can use what they find there to break into other sites and chain reaction it to get basically anything they want. And so I'm thinking about this and I'm going like, oh my God, do I really have to change all my fucking passwords? And I'm like, I know I should. And I probably will do a little bit, but I don't even remember all the places I have freaking passwords. You know, all the places I have accounts. You know, I have no freaking idea. Like, because, you know, every other week I'm doing something online and someplace wants me to register to get something I want. And I log in and I create an account and I give them one of my throwaway passwords. But you know, that's not safe. That's not secure. So I'm thinking, okay, should I be using like, you know, Apple's now got built into the operating this thing where it generates random passwords for you and saves them. Should I be using that everywhere? Or should I be using 1Password or one of these freaking tools? And the answer is yes, I probably should be.
I am trying to use that, by the way.
How's it going? Cause every time I've looked at it, I'm like, that's gotta be a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Is it?
It works to a certain extent. It's a little bit of pain in the ass, but it does work to a certain extent. It's not as good as I would like.
But of course, even there, if somebody steals your 1Password, then they've got everything, right?
Well, yeah, but they would have to be in my desktop computer. I mean, in order to really get it. I mean, so yeah. I mean, I guess.
Yeah, and so like, look, and you know, I'm thinking, okay, I at the very least, I should start changing up these passwords and stop doing the thing I've done forever of, you know, I have 4 or 5 passwords I use everywhere, and I like use one of them for all the news sites, and I use one of them for all the shit I don't care about at all, and I use another one for financial stuff and another one for e-commerce, but like I use the same password over and over again. Like, and this is exactly the thing they tell you never to do. Like, all my credit cards have the same password.
Yeah, whatever. Everybody does that, for God's sakes. Give me a fucking break.
And so I'm like,
nobody
okay.
Can, I mean, how many fucking passwords can we remember?
Well, and this is where I you know, there was somebody, one of my Facebook friends, somebody I went to high school with, posted some guidelines from CMU, actually, on smart ways to generate passwords. And one of them that I always use is, I think of a sentence, like, you know, Ivana is an idiot today, and that'd be I-I-I-T, and I changed some of the I's to ones, and I put the period at the end, and I used the punctuation, some capital and some lowercase. But I remember the sentence. And then what this person suggested was, what you can do is you remember that sentence, but then you vary it per site. So, like, instead of just, Yvonne is an idiot at all of my sites, you know, Yvonne is an idiot at AOL. Yvonne is an idiot at Chase Bank or whatever. And so you add a little bit of it to be specific.
Now that I've given it a little bit more thought, I got to tell you, I'm thinking about, for example, I don't use the same password I use for my work computer, that I use for my home computer, that I use for my checking account, that I use for my savings account. I actually use different passwords for every single one.
You're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, of those things you listed,
my home banking, my savings account, my email, and my work password, and my home computer are all different passwords.
My work computer, my home computer, my email are all different, but several of my banking accounts use the same password.
I'm going
which
through,
is different
and
from
I'm
those
like,
other ones I listed.
I actually, there may be, my main accounts have different passwords. I will use a repetitive password for something where it's relatively innocuous information.
And the thing is, for the really innocuous stuff, I used a fairly easy-to-guess password, too, which
right.
is bad.
Yeah, but which, like, I'm like, I could give a crap. I mean, like,
yeah,
whatever.
But the thing is, even on the I could give a crap things, what you start realizing is, well, do they have any information about you whatsoever other than that username and password? And
no, they don't. I mean, for the most part, no. I mean,
but like, if they did, let's just say, if they did, if they had even your full name or your address or anything else like that, that stuff can be used to bootstrap yourself into other sites.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I mean, but come on. But most of the information they would need, look at the information they need. In order to get somewhere else, what do they need? My birthday, my Social Security, whatever. Fuck, I'm sure that they could find that from 100 different fucking places.
Yeah, well, and this is the kind of thing where people also say the stupid security questions when you call up and say, I forgot my password. Let's see, what kind of things do they ask you? Your mother's maiden name? Okay, people
right.
can find that out. Where did you
yeah.
go to high school? People can find that out.
Right.
You know, what was your favorite pet's name? Okay, that's a little bit harder, but if they have access to your Facebook, at some point in time you may have mentioned your pets.
I'll tell you what, but the one that's like, that I think it's impossible, that is the most difficult, that is used by a few places I know, which is pretty good, is like the city where you were born.
Oh, that's pretty easy to find.
Not really, no, what I realized. People know where you're from in general, but not really what city you were actually really born on.
I'm
from Puerto Rico, but I guarantee you have no clue what the name of the city where I was born is.
Well, of course, and I'm an exception because that's directly on my website. If you want to find out where I'm born,
oh, well,
it's a couple
of clicks. I don't post it anywhere.
But no, I understand what
and
you're saying.
And most people don't. I mean, because if you actually, the name of the actual city, I'm not talking about, you know, like, say, yeah, I live in South Florida and Miami, but, you know, every city is, like, different. There's Davie, Weston, that. I mean, it just because you were born in that area doesn't necessarily mean that you know the name of the actual city.
No, I know, but a little bit of guessing, you know.
I guarantee you that. I will tell you this, that on that one I found that if in a lot of places, tough to crack. Because you try to guess,
okay,
you would never guess it in a million years.
Maybe for you that's tough to crack. For a lot of people, it's not going to be.
I got to tell you something. I'm thinking like right now, any of the friends that I know of, I'm grasping at straws.
Here's the thing, though. That's one of many questions, and almost all of these sites, if you get one wrong, we'll ask you another one, and you'll get one of the easier ones.
Yeah. No.
Know, so it's not a really huge barrier, and someone determined.
Well, actually, the one that I like so recently is some people. I mean, the better verification has been, you know what? Hey, we'll send you a text message to your cell phone, which is probably better verification than a lot of this bullshit.
It's probably better. It's getting closer to the two-factor thing. I mean, there are problems with that one, too. I mean, if somebody steals your cell phone or something. But,
well, yeah.
But yeah, it's better than some of these others.
I mean, a lot better than a lot of the others.
What the security advice people say, and this just, to me, like, is mind-boggling because it makes it even worse, is, like, when they have those security questions, don't give the real answers. You know,
well, yeah, true.
Like,
but the problem is that
then
I've tried
you have
that.
To remember.
Oh, okay, I've tried that scheme before. Okay, the problem is that they don't remember what the fuck I said.
Exactly. It's like, where were you born? Oh, not where I'm really born, but where did
I was born. Fuck.
Because of course I shouldn't say the same answer to more than one place.
Yeah, no, that doesn't work. I tried that scheme. That's a bad idea.
Yeah, like, look, this problem, and I know we've said this to the stuff before, this stuff will not be solved until someone comes up with a method for identification that does not rely on human beings remembering shit.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Well...
You know,
use hair follicles off your head in order to
the fingerprint, the biometric stuff, all of that has other.
No, I'm telling you, you're gonna have you cut a piece of your hair in order to log onto your computer every time.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, that's not that hard. You know, I mean, it requires physical access, but you know.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. It requires physical access. You have to be there. You know,
it is more challenging. I mean, there's no question the biometric stuff is more challenging. But the problem with biometric stuff as well, though, is then you can't be anonymous. And there's advantages to anonymity too.
Well, or then somebody could come over and like try to like freaking like just cut your finger off.
Yes, and you know when the whole Apple fingerprint thing came up, people did. Specify that, by the way, that won't work with the iPhones. Dead finger will not activate the iPhone. It has to be a living finger.
That really sucks.
Of course, then we talked about when they came up, you did have the issue of, you know, living with someone, and while you're sleeping, they use your finger to push your iPhone, and then they can read your stuff.
Yes, of course, because that's the real, yeah, you know, it's like, yeah, that really happens all the fucking time. Yeah, my wife just, you know, goes like, yeah, God. Anyway, you know what? We've run really, really late. We only did three topics.
I know. We only did three topics. We started late, but I know it's late for you. But we'll skip the Mozilla CEO. I thought.
Well, I do want to talk about it, but that controversy won't have died anytime soon.
We'll see if we remember next week, because it's not just about the Mozilla CEO.
Yeah,
there's been a much larger conversation about whether they've been saying, is there a sore winner problem for sort of the gay rights movement where they've essentially clearly won now. It's only a matter of time. It's spreading everywhere, blah, blah, blah. The states are falling one by one for gay marriage and all kinds of other stuff. And are they... Is there a backlash where they're treating the people who are not acquiescing to this change badly? Anyway,
yeah,
you're
but
right. Let's do that at a different time.
We can go into depth. And I mean, there were a lot of people that clearly were uncomfortable with the position, but yet at the same time were uncomfortable with the resolution as well. Okay, so.
Yeah, anyway. We'll talk about that subject another week someday. You guys know the drill. Email me, abelsmay@abelsmay.com. Contact us both on Twitter. I'm abelsmay. I'm at abelsmay, and Yvonne is at imbo. We love to hear from you. Tell all your friends, and we'll talk to you again soon. Alex, do you want to say goodbye? Say goodbye.
I will say goodbye how dogs say goodbye.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay, bye everyone. Talk to you next week.
Bye.